of all, some of you ask for the 10 golden rules that I shared last week. You're frantically trying to take notes on them, and I appreciate that. They are printed for you there, so hope that's helpful, and I appreciate the encouragement that you actually wanted them. Today we're going to be looking at Romans and kind of ending a series on New Year's resolutions. We've talked about being spiritually and physically and financially challenged, and we're going to talk about being relationally challenged today, but this actually starts a rather lengthy, several-week series on relationships, and I want you to think about relationships. I mean, my kind of context is husband, wife, dad. My parents are both deceased, so it's dad, granddad, but your relationship, what I want you to do is think about it. You don't have to write this down and turn it in, but I want you to think about two or three relationships in your life that you would like to see improved. Maybe a relationship with a father or a mother. It may be with a mother-in-law. It may be with a coworker at work or a roommate. And I'm going to suggest to you that some of the illustrations I use and the personal examples are going to be out of marriage or out of parenting. But I don't want you to think about it in those terms. I want you to think about it in terms of, you know, what are the two or three relationships I would really like to strengthen? And so unless you get that context in your mind, unless you kind of focus in on two or three people that you can think of, I'd like to improve. It doesn't have to be a bad relationship. It doesn't have to be somebody you hate. I'm thinking about just some place that you would like to improve a relationship, maybe with a child, maybe with a grandchild, maybe in-law, outlaw. I don't know where you're at, but I would say this series is going to be a lot more meaningful to you if you put in your own context of who do I have in my sphere of influence with whom I would like to improve a relationship. Now, some relationships are just not bad, just not good. They're just not based on the right thing. So following up last week's talking about finances, I want to show you a video that shows the wrong basis for a relationship. Think about if your neighbors were like these neighbors, all right?
Hi! It's us, the Sanders. Hi. Jim and Joena.
I'm Joena.
Now, I know you opened the door and you went, uh-oh, it's those nosy
uh-oh.
Neighbors.
Nosy neighbors.
But we're not nosy.
We're not.
Well, kind of we are.
Maybe.
Here's the deal. A lot of times throughout the years, we've knocked on your door and said, hey, what can we do for you?
Yeah.
You know? Because that's the type of people we are.
I know.
But this time, we're going to kind of turn the tables.
Flip-flop.
And ask you what you can do for us.
Yeah.
Hey, hold the phones. You see, we'll just cut to the quick, okay?
Yeah.
We have no money. We're broke.
We got nothing.
Yeah, zippo zookas.
Nada.
Bupkis. You see, what we've done is we've taken the happy train to Credit Town.
Woo, woo.
And we've been having so much fun, we are up
woo.
To dead in our eyeballs.
Over our heads.
So we need your help.
Yeah.
Okay. I know what you're thinking. Mm-hmm. Hey, aren't you believers? And we are.
We are.
We love the Lord.
So much.
But we've been loving the world.
Woo!
You guys have some great stuff out there.
Really do.
And our house is proof. We got so many gizmos and gadgets.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Woo!
And we ain't about to give them up.
Nope.
Okay. So here's what we've decided to do.
Yeah.
We have proposed a bailout package for you to help us out with. What do you say?
Yeah.
Huh? Oh, hey.
On.
Hey, Senator, hold on there, okay? You see, we need your help because we are scared.
Yeah, we're so stressed out. We got creditors nipping at our heels like a duck on a June bug.
She's got a way with words, and it's so true.
Yeah.
It's so true.
We're so scared. We're like a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs.
All right, Juno, that's enough.
Okay.
See, here's the deal. The Bible says in the book of Malachi.
That's Malachi.
Whatever. It says, God says, hey, test me with your money. Bring all your tithes into the storehouse. And I'll just be honest with you. I failed every test. And my storehouse is about to have a pool.
Woo!
We are so excited.
Yeah.
And we ain't getting rid of that.
Nope.
So what do you say? Can you help us?
Yeah.
We've earmarked this rescue plan.
Oh,
hey. It's good stuff.
It's win-win.
Come on. Okay. At least just give us some flour.
Can we have some flour? Oh. Hey, our son's birthday is this weekend. You could just take that flour and make us a whole cake.
What do you say, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that's a fine howdy-do.
I know.
Well, I guess it's back to the house to do a revision on the rescue plan.
Well, we gotta hurry. I got a manicure in 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Finances. We talked about that last week. But having someone that always wants something is probably not a good foundation for a relationship. I've got one of those folks in my life. I mean, every time they call, you know, I mean, it's the pleasantries, how are you doing? But it gets down to, okay, what do you need? You know, because I know they're always going to ask something for me. And that's not good. And it does take two people to have a good relationship. So I'm not saying that it's all on you. But I want you to ask the question, what is on me? What can I do to improve the relationships in my life? We're going to see that in Romans 12 in just a second. Let's have a word of prayer and we'll start this week's high point. Father, thank you so much for how you have blessed us. Thank you for bringing people into our lives who bless us, who encourage us, and sometimes challenge us. And Father, in the quietness of our own thoughts, sometimes that person comes to mind and we go, you know, why can't I be closer to them? Why can't I have a better relationship with my child or with my in-laws? And so, Father, help us during these next several weeks as we look at relationships from your standpoint, help us to be better family members, better co-workers, better parents or grandparents, Father, better friends to those around us. In Christ's name I pray, amen. Paul writes to the Romans in Romans 12, Therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, I urge you to present your bodies as living sacrifice. That's verse 1. That's not a part of our Bible study, but it gives the context for everything else he says. Living sacrifice. In other words, you are going to put your all on the altar. Someone said the problem with being a living sacrifice is you keep trying to crawl off. You know, you don't want to give your all. But that is the context in which he says everything else here. I'm going to share with you several personal illustrations about relationships, but I want to give you a context out of verse 9. In verse 9, he says, love must be without hypocrisy. If we're going to understand genuine love, love must be without hypocrisy, detest evil, and cling to good. Let's unpack that for a second. The love used in this word is agape love. Agape is the Greek word that's always used for the love God has for us and the love that we're to have for other Christians. Now, it's just one of four words in the Greek that express love. They're different things. I mean, we say, I love ice cream and I love my mother. I mean, we understand it's different kinds of love, but the Greeks actually had different kinds of words to express that love. Love must be without hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is another interesting word. It is based on the word hypocrites, which was the word for an actor on the stage. And you remember on the Greek stage, the actors showed that they were funny or sad by putting masks up in front of their face. And so you still see that as kind of a symbol for an actor's guild or something, the frowny mask, the smiley mask. That comes from the Greek stage where they showed who they were by the mask. And so the word actor was one pretending to be something they're not. And so we get the word, we actually transliterate the word for actor into hypocrisy, and that is someone pretending to be something they're not. Oftentimes we think of that guy, that church member, the church is full of hypocrites, you got those hypocrites, and we think of those as bad Christians, okay? Actually, a hypocrite is someone pretending to be a Christian when they don't act like a Christian. That's what a hypocrite is. And so he says, let your love be without hypocrisy, without putting on a face. You know, we unfortunately hug people and tell them that we love them, but our actions deny what we're saying. So he said, let your love be genuine. Perhaps one of the great examples of giving agape love is servant love. If you really want to look into agape love, you go to 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter, verses 4 through 8, and he just gives a laundry list. It's loyal. It thinks the best. It always serves, always puts their interests first. It is a servant kind of love. And in 1 Corinthians 13, where it says love is, you could literally substitute the word God is. And it is a perfect description of the kind of love God has toward us and the love we're to have toward other people. So he says, let your love, God-like love, agape love, Be without hypocrisy. Don't let your actions deny what you say you're doing. Perhaps one of the most powerful testimonies I've heard on agape giving love was by a pastor who taught during the Watts riots. Some of you remember that, 1968, I think it was, South Central L.A., Burn, Baby, Burn. I mean, it was a sad, sad time for that area. And this pastor actually stood out against the rioters. He said, that's not Christian. That is, you know, you're ruining your own neighborhoods by burning down buildings. And so this pastor was an outspoken opponent of the rioters, and thus he got, from some of the advocates of that taking the law into their own hands, he got death threats. And he said, during the time of the riots, I thought that someone would probably try to plant a bomb in my car or under my car. And he said, I lived in fear every morning when I went out and turned the key of my car, thinking that it might explode and kill me. He said it wasn't until after the turbulence was over that I learned that I had nothing to fear from my car, because my wife sneaked out every morning while I was getting ready and started the car herself. Now that's self-sacrificing love. That's putting yourself on the line because you actually believe the person you love is more important, more deserving of life than you are. And so he said, let your agape love be without hypocrisy. Don't let your actions deny what you're saying with your lips. Let your actions reaffirm what you're saying with your lips. And understanding genuine love, then he says in 9b, detest evil. Detest evil. What kind of evil things creep into relationships? Lying, adultery, cheating, verbal abuse, gossip, sarcasm, unbridled anger. Evil things creep into relationships, wormwood that rot the fabric of the relationship. He says you need to hate those things. You need to hate untruth, not flirt around with telling a little lie. You need to hate that. Detest the evil. Sometimes we learn to live with the evil. I heard about a Romanian visitor to our country. And, you know, you go into these certain neighborhoods and they've got speed bumps, speed bump ahead. And then you go over it, you know. And he asked a very logical question. He said, would it not be easier to fix the bumps rather than to simply announce them? Sometimes we are not so concerned with fixing the bumps. We just announce them. And they're so easy to point out in someone else. It's so easy to point out their shortcomings, the evil that they bring to the relationship. But he said, detest the evil and cling to what is good. What's good? Well, what's good is obedience to God's commands. What's good is allowing the Holy Spirit to work through you. What's good is what would Jesus do? Emulating Jesus Christ in your relationships. So he says, you know, don't even tolerate evil creeping into that relationship. If you have to wonder about whether it's right or not, you know, to cheat or to lie or to lose your temper, you know, rather than just say, well, that's just the way I am. You need to detest that. You need to root out those things. So you need to understand genuine love. It's without hypocrisy, and it comes down on the side of good. That's the two basic fundamentals. Now he gives several commands in the practice of genuine love. He says, and here he introduces two more words for love. I said agape was godlike love. He said, show family affection. That is phileo storge. Phileo is also used in brotherly love. In fact, he said, show family affection to one another with brotherly love, and that is the word Philadelphia, city of brotherly love. So he introduces two more words for love. Storge kind of has that implication of love based on duty or love based on responsibility. Back in the day, they were to love the emperor. Soldiers were to love their general. and family members were to love each other, but was based on an assumed sense of responsibility. You know, you can choose your friends, you can't choose your relatives. So he's basically saying, those that you're obligated to love, show them love. So show family affection, this love with family. But he says to one another, with brotherly love. So Christians, get this, are commanded all three ways. Agape, storge, and phileo. We're commanded to show that kind of love, all three flavors, to all Christians and the people to whom we should show love. Piero Ferrucci, the author, said about being brotherly love, being nice, being kind. He says, being kind is the simplest way to become who we really are. And I would add to that, to become who Christ wants us to be. It should be exhibited in being nice. And generally, when I am rude to someone, short with someone, angry with someone, it's because I feel like I have the right to do that. You know, I don't have to explain to my kid. I could just tell him it's because I said so. I don't have to be nice and understanding to my wife. I just need to demand my way because I deserve that in some way. But he said, based on who you are as a Christian, you have the responsibility to show brotherly affection and family affection to one another. Tom Clancy, the author of, you know, so many thrillers and military novels and things like that, but it was discovered that he was showing a special affection and kindness to someone outside his family, a child with cancer. And someone said, why, what is it in your ethos that would have you visit the hospital and help pay medical bills and do the things that you're doing? And he says the number one rule of the warrior code, and he's always talking about the warrior code in his books, but he said the number one rule of the warrior code is that the first duty of the strong is to protect the weak. So don't go into relationships, especially husband-wife, saying, I have the right to do this. Say, you know, I need to protect that person. I need to shelter them in my arms. I need to show brotherly love and family affection. So the love, first of all, is preferential. Not I have the right to my way, but how can I make your life better by showing preferential love to you? I got a picture of my family. And this is the whole gang. And my mom passed away the following year. This is December 2007. In 2008, she went home to be with the Lord. So this is the last really family picture of my brother, his family, my sister, her family, and then my family, three of the five grandchildren that we have right now. It's one of my favorite pictures. Diane actually framed this. By the way, welcome back, Diane. She's just come back from Australia, from down under. All right, it's good to have her back. And Amber, wave at them. Amber's been kind of holding the fort since Diane's. Give her a hand. And the Bells, of course, help us every other week. And let me just say, with Diane sitting there, we're trying to get this catering thing right, okay? And so we've kind of experimented around. And if you have thoughts on that, don't be afraid to email Diane. We would like to get it down to maybe a couple of options. And we'd love for there to be barbecue in the mix. You know, this is all doesn't have anything to do with brotherly affection here. But let Diane know if you have preference or have ideas or have suggestions. We're just kind of trying to do some experiments here. And we want to provide a good experience for you on Wednesday. But this is my family. This is our Christmas dinner together at one of our favorite restaurants in Oklahoma City. And, you know, we don't see each other, especially, I mean, I've got some in D.C., some in Alva, Oklahoma, some in Georgia, and now some in Hong Kong. You know, the fact of the matter is that picture is never going to be able to be recreated again. One, my mom's gone to heaven, but two, probably all those families are not going to be able to get into the same room again. It's just going to be logistically impossible. My point is, enjoy your moments of life. In 2007, I didn't realize when I had the waiter at Applewood's restaurant snap a picture of our family that would be the only picture like that I would have. Blurry, red eye, done with a phone, you know, wasn't professionally done at all. But I treasure that. I treasure the moment of being with my family. Do that with your family. And those of you who, like me, don't have family nearby, do that with your church family. Do that with your friends God's given you. Treasure those moments. Show them kindness. Show them love. Show them affection. Second word is passionate. Passionate. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not lack diligence. Another word for that is passion. Do not lack diligence. Be fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. So Pastor Greg Mott at First Baptist, he was talking about relationships one time, and he said, I think, a pretty true thing. He said, after a few years, you can manage a relationship by skill without passion. I mean, you know where that person likes to go to lunch. You know what they like to talk about. You know what they like for birthdays. I mean, this could be marriage. It could be just friends. But you can manage it by skill, but you've lost the passion. You no longer have passion in your relationship. I've told some of you the story before about the lady that was feeling like she was lacking passion in her marriage. And one day when her husband, I mean, it was always, he came home at the same time, he got out, he plopped down, watched SportsCenter. I mean, it's the same routine every day after work. And so one time she stopped him at the door and said, I want you to see something. So the guy across the street drives up, he goes to the door, takes his wife in a passionate embrace, kisses her deeply, carries her across the threshold. And the woman looks at her husband and says, why can't you do that? He goes, honey, I hardly know that woman. You can manage a relationship with skill with the absence of passion. But the Bible wants us to do both. What's the word we have in Ecclesiastes? What your hand or what you find to do, do with all your might. If it's worth doing, it's worth doing well. Don't just acquiesce into kind of a pattern without passion. One of the most passionate guys I've come across in the ministry in terms of history is Dwight L. Moody. I had the privilege of going to the Moody Church in Chicago. If you want to show that picture, this is the interior of the auditorium at Moody Church in Chicago. Seats about 3,000 people. It was built during the Depression. It was built actually back. The cost, the money they raised to build this building was very, very close to the money they raised, the money that was needed to build the Empire State Building. I mean, they did not skimp on this building at all. This is an amazing building. And you don't get there. I've been a part of a few fundraising things at church. You don't get there with a lot of passion, with a lot of desire. Dwight L. Moody, he weighed over 3 bills. He was a former shoe salesman that never was ordained. And yet, he was a man that really shook 2 countries, the United States and Britain, for Christ with his powerful preaching and his passion for the ministry. He was one of the founders of Sunday school in the United States. One time, Abraham Lincoln had heard about his Sunday school and said, could I just drop by and take a look? He was actually on his way for his second inauguration or first, whatever it was. And he said, I'd like to just poke my head in, but I don't want any news media. I don't want to hear anything. I don't want you to use my name or anything. And Moody agreed, and Lincoln came in and stood at the back, and all these children were gathered around the Bible teacher. And, of course, Dwight L. Moody, he goes, we have a special honored guest today, the president-elect of the United States. Mr. Lincoln, would you come up and say a few words? Well, Lincoln hated that, as most public speakers do, to be just called on the moment without any preparation. But he graciously got up and just said a couple of lines. He said, I appreciate Mr. Moody and what he's doing for the children of Chicago, and I think it is a great work. Well, that showed up in every newspaper in Chicago the next day. He had a passion for what he did. He wanted to do it well, and he was fervent in spirit. And we have lasting landmarks with the universities. And he was one of the founders of the YMCA, believe it or not, Young Men's Christian Association. So Moody left his mark because of his passion. Where will you leave your mark? Are you just through skill, kind of going through the day? Are you passionately investing yourself in other people's lives? He said, outdo one another in showing honor. Honor is love put into action. Honor is kind of putting that person up on a pedestal. You know, how would I treat a dignitary, a hero, if they walked into the room? Where is the awe factor in my relationship? So he said, outdo one another in showing honor. Don't lack diligence. Be fervent in spirit, and in do so, serving the Lord. The third thing that he gives us in terms of generous love is being purposeful. He says to rejoice in hope. Now, rejoicing and hope are intertwined here. You're going to go through bad spots of a relationship. You're going to have people who discourage you in relationships. You're going to have people who just disappoint you. I heard about a husband that was trying to get his wife to be more positive. And it just seemed like she was always bad news, and this needs to be fixed, and we need more money, and why can't you get a better job? And he said, honey, you just need to be more positive. You need to rejoice in hope. So one day he came home, and she said, I've been trying to think of something positive to say, and I want you to know the airbags on your new BMW really works well. Sometimes it's tough to find much to rejoice about. But as Elizabeth Elliot says, you can always, in any circumstance, be thankful for what's given or to complain for what's not given. And one or the other becomes a habit. Rejoice, complain. And so he says, rejoice in hope. It's based on the hope Christ puts within us. Ultimately, the hope of heaven, but also the hope that his Spirit works in us. Be purposeful in practicing generous love. And then be patient. Related strongly to this hope is to be patient. He says to be patient in affliction. Will Beaver wrote a book called A Complaint-Free World, and he offered a 21-day challenge. He said, try to go through 21 days, with 3 weeks, without offering a complaint, without complaining against anything. And he actually, I think he had some sort of little markers that you took out when you complained, and then if you said three good things, you could get rid of the marker. And there was a system involved. But it really brought to light how much we tend to, just out of habit, complain about things. So he said, be patient in affliction. Now, I'm thoroughly convinced that in North America, we have no idea what the rest of the world goes through in terms of affliction. We think affliction's bad traffic on 290. We think affliction is when our wireless goes out and we can't access the internet on our iPad. We think, you know, that's affliction. Let me give you a picture of a guy by the name of Ralph Bourdais. Ralph met us on that trip to Chicago. On the left is our missions pastor. On the right is our new Cypress campus minister. The guy in the blue shirt you probably recognize from speaking down here. Who is that behind those Foster Grants? That's Pastor Greg Mott of Houston. Now, the other guy, second from the left, is Ralph Bourdais. He is a native of India. And he was appalled by the affliction of women forced into the sex trade business. And he found that in the bordellos of those cities in India, they would get pregnant, they would have a child. The child, sorry if this is indelicate, the child would have to sleep underneath the bed where the woman was plying her trade. They would grow up the child to be 8 or 9 years old, then force the child into the sex trade, boy or girl. And Ralph was absolutely appalled by what was happening. And so he started a ministry called As Our Own, in which they were rescuing children out of the sex trade, and the mothers were actually happy to give up their babies out of a brothel, because they realized there was no future other than being in the same business. So the mothers were willing to give them up. The owners of the brothels were actually willing to give them up because they felt like that was a distraction for the mothers trying to be a parent and earn a living for the pimp. So then the only thing was, where do we put the babies? Where do we put the children? And they created a series of orphanages in India specifically designed to take care. And Ralph, I had lunch with him on this very day, and Ralph said one of the things they learned early on is you couldn't really just cut them loose. You know, it wasn't like when they got to be 12, they could go to a boarding school. When they got to be 16, they could be out on their own. When they got to be 18, you could. He said, because as soon as we turned them out on the street, if they didn't have marketable skills in another area, they would gravitate back toward what their mom had done. And so he said, we understood that in India, without a father figure to protect these girls primarily, they were going to be lost. So he said, we had to adopt them as our own. We had to take them as far as a normal father would in a culture. And if that means sending them to college, if that means going to a trade school, if that means positioning them in a job, we had to treat them as though they were our own children. Ralph Bourdain knows a little bit about affliction. He knows a little bit about suffering. He knows a little bit about injustice. But he is patient in that affliction because he rejoices in hope. He sees a preferable future, and he sees ability to do something about that. My question for you would be this. Why are you so impatient with those you love? What is the affliction that pushes your button so much? Someone said, the cross I bear is my husband. That's not really biblically true, you know. That's not a cross God's given you to bear. That's not an affliction. That is, in fact, an opportunity for ministry. Moving right along, the next is prayerful. I don't think I have to say a whole lot about that. Be persistent in prayer. Prayer is putting hope in God to change the circumstances or make you capable of dealing with the circumstances. The lie from Satan is if I simply married someone else, things would be differently. Statistics don't bear that out. The promise from God is if you take it to God and be patient, He can change things for the better. I've got a guy that prays for me. Next photo. This is Charles Reed. You've seen Mr. Charles down here. He is a veteran, disabled, lives in a veteran's home not too far from here. He's holding my grandson Samuel. That's my daughter-in-law, Lauren. Charles Reed prays for me every single day. Charles doesn't have a whole lot that the world has to offer. There's not a whole lot he can do. Physically, he's restricted. Financially, he's incapable of blessing people. He is past 80 now, and he would say, mentally, he said, I forget things. But he is committed to the ministry of prayer. And I know every day, and he says, you tell your son in Hong Kong, there's an old man in Houston that prays for him every single day. Be persistent in prayer. Don't give up. As long as you're praying, you're trusting that God is going to be able to do something about that situation. The next is to be philanthropic. I got a little testy here on the alliteration. You know, the P's, I start running out of P's after a while. But he should share with the saints and their needs. Sometimes for folks in our church, we'll do a little money tree. You don't see that all that much anymore. It used to be real popular for pastors, and you actually get a little tree and you fold up dollar bills or $20 bills or whatever, and you put on there, and it just blossoms in dollars or money. And a little girl looked at it and she goes, huh, where do you get a seed for a tree like that? You know, looks pretty good to me. And don't you wish that money did grow on trees? But it doesn't. But we are commanded to share with the saints and their needs. James said anyone that doesn't take care of their own household is worse than an infidel. And so that has been a very convicting thing to me as a minister. Sometimes I find it more easy to share with people out there than I do to take time for my own family, take time to really meet the needs of those closest to me. The next thing is to be polite, pursue hospitality. I've got another little, maybe my final picture here. That's our Thanksgiving. We realized that we were going to be alone for the first time, not having any family in the area for Thanksgiving, be just Bonnie and me and two dogs. And so we began to think of other couples that lived in our area who were in the same situation. And you know, I'm not saying that we've got it all together on hospitality. We don't do as much as we probably should. But I just want to say to you, turn a lemon into a lemonade. When you are sensing a need in your own life, try to seek out how you can help meet that need through Christ in other people's lives. Pursue hospitality. Be a hospitable person. And then finally, be persistent. Be persistent. This kind of introduces our relationship series. It's not the summary of the relationship series, but he says, bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse. Gary Smalley said in his book, For Better or For Best, one of the key things that a woman can do to improve a relationship with her husband is to be able to endure hardship. Now, that's tough because a woman is very relationally attuned. She knows when things are wrong. But he said, you've got to persist in prayer, rejoice in hope, and allow God to work on your husband. James Dobson said he's never known of a strong Christian couple who did not first endure a difficult chapter of marriage. Bless those who persecute you. That's the hardest thing to do. We want to retaliate to those who persecute. Somebody says an angry word to us, we want to send two angry words back. But he said, bless and do not curse. This gives a framework of what we're going to be talking about the next two or three weeks, several weeks. Just focus in on two or three people you know, family members, office workers, friends. I'd like to improve that relationship. And see, challenge yourself every week if you can take one thing away that you can put into practice that week to improve a relationship. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much that your word gives us specifics of things we can do to improve our relationships. Help us not to be just hearers of the word, but doers also. In Jesus Christ's name I pray. Amen. Bless you.